Sometimes I feel like we can't catch a break.
When you have opportunities like that, it's kind of the other side of the story. It's like, well, maybe that's why we got into the larger space. There's something to be said about multifamily. I think they are recession proof. Someone always needs a place to live, always needs a roof over their head. Not everyone can afford to get a mortgage, nor has the credit to get a mortgage. I mean, real estate in general is a good hedge against inflation. Hey guys, welcome back to Sky's the Limit podcast, a deep dive into real estate investing. We're your hosts, Mike and Ryan. What's up, Ryan?
What's going on?
Not much. Glad to be here. Back at it again.
Absolutely.
What's new with you?
New stuff. So, Decanter and Yassas. Check these out.
Thank you to our producers for getting the stuff together. It's pretty awesome.
Honestly, what do you got today? Pumped. We have Basil Hayden today.
All right.
Solid choice. And I did notice something in particular. You have ice in your glass.
I know. I'm a bit of a, I love my bourbon, but I gotta have a couple cubes, a big cube, you might say.
It's just too much for you. Is that what that means?
Yeah. Or? I just can't. I'm not on a neat level yet.
Okay. Well, you'll get there.
I gotta stick with my cubes.
You'll get there.
Waters it down, makes the glass look a little bit more full. So
That's true.
Just to update you on my whole passport situation. So,
oh, right.
Mentioned this last episode, but got a tip to call your local legislator. So I called Chris Murphy's office, who's one of our senators here in Connecticut. Got someone on the phone right away. So having major passport issues, expedited it 7 to 9 weeks, leaving for Europe in 2 weeks, still not here. And so I called the office. Someone recommended to calling. I was like, all right, well, sure enough, give him a call. Someone answered right away. Lucas answered. And he couldn't be more helpful. Honestly, it was like a breath of fresh air. He's like, yep, I'll contact your local passport agency and we'll try to move this right along. And so I think I'm going to Europe. I think it'll be all right. So I don't have the passport in hand yet, but I didn't know that was a thing, honestly. I didn't know that you could call your local government and they can help expedite that. That was like shocking to me. So
that blows my mind. Yeah. Right now.
How about real estate? What's new with you in real estate?
Oh man. Sometimes I feel like we can't catch a break.
Yeah. Some wins and losses definitely for the past, week or so.
Yeah. Middletown. Our big property. Yeah, we took a pretty good blow there last week with that elevator
God,
news.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's rough, but we'll get through it. So basically what happened, this is really, really helpful. I'm glad that we can share this with everyone listening. So we got a $17,000 repair bill on the elevator. And this isn't like, we're not talking about like replacing the elevator, like making it look better. Like this is like, just like a preemptive strike against what could probably go wrong with the door, like
right.
The door that opens. Apparently, it's just like replacing a couple parts that are kind of hard to get for $17,000.
$17,000. That is insane.
It's not even broken yet.
just repairs and maintenance.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I would go back to having a building with an elevator in it. It's just kind of a good experience. You're learning a lot. I certainly didn't do enough due diligence, and I've learned a lot, and we can share that and later in the episode and future episodes. But yeah, it's wild how everyone wants to go bigger, scale up, bigger commercial buildings. But there's something to be said for the smaller 2 to 4 residential multifamily buildings. It's just like when you get these large bills, it can really.
Knock out your cash flow for a while.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, at least for the whole year.
Is there even something you could spend that much money on like a duplex? Like that's like an entire
roof, maybe?
Siding and roof and windows.
30, 40, 50 years. So yeah, that was definitely an L for the week, is that big old repair bill. But plugging away, moving forward.
Any wins?
Well, the condo. So we have a duplex down in Fairfield, Connecticut. One side's an Airbnb and the other side is now vacant. And it's going okay. First stab at Airbnb, learned a lot, and we'll share that in future episodes to come. But what we decided to do, which I think is pretty cool, hasn't been executed yet, but what we decided to do was hire an attorney to make them condos. So each, two condos, they're still connected, no construction costs involved in that. It's literally just paperwork, and you have to get a survey and an engineer and you know, obviously attorney fees, but so all in to make it a condo, so two individual condos, it's going to cost $12,500. That includes everything. The attorney handles everything. For perspective, we paid $817,000 for this duplex. We could probably sell it for what, $850,000 right now. So wouldn't make sense to sell it.
As a duplex.
As a duplex. However, each unit is a 2-bedroom, 2.5-bath. And you can sell condos right now are comping on the same street for $700,000 to $800,000 each. So it's kind of a no-brainer. We'll see how it goes, but I don't see how you can lose. So just keep that in mind for all the listeners out there. If you have, you know, a multifamily, and I know at least in Hartford, Connecticut, this was done a lot. They actually banned it. People were taking, so taxes are relatively pretty high in Hartford, Connecticut. And so people were taking their 6, 9, 12, 20 unit buildings and making them individual condos and converting them to condo status. And they were saving thousands a year in taxes. There was a loophole there somewhere. The city got involved. Now you can't do that anymore. But it's a great way to kind of be creative and add value that, I mean, $12,500 is not chump change, but in the grand scheme of things, to try to sell each one off for $700,000 and, you know, that's a pretty good payday. So we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens.
Should be in the win column.
Fingers crossed.
I think it's really important to talk about like what should you be looking at buying for like a first timer. Maybe you got a couple properties. Like, I think it's important to discuss what types of properties are available for someone like
that. So if you had to go back and do it all over again, so you have experience. So there's a lot of different properties out there. You got commercial,
right?
And within commercial, you have office, you have mixed use, you have multifamily commercial. I mean, it's a big list. So if you had to go back, and now that you've owned a little bit of everything, what would you go back and do? Would you start off in commercial? Would you start off in single families? Would you start off in multi or 2 to 4 units? Like, tell me about it.
That's a great question. I would start out like how we did. Duplex, started small, scaled up. I think when you're just beginning, getting your feet wet, don't have a ton of capital to deploy, you're not going to have a huge repair bill like we did on the elevator in something small. And I think you can get away with a lot in a smaller property. I think you can make your mistakes, take a couple licks, but still be in the game. I mean, you don't want to have a repair bill like that on something and it literally puts you out of the whole game.
Yeah, there's something to be said about multifamily. I think they are, you know, in my opinion, they're recession proof. I mean, real estate in general is a good hedge against inflation. And someone always needs a place to live, always needs a roof over their head. Not everyone can afford to get a mortgage, nor has the credit to get a mortgage. So I always think there's going to be a place, especially in like the C-class demographic, which is primarily what we own, right? I mean, besides that Fairfield duplex, which is A-class, like everything else has been C-class. And it's because if there is a recession or, you know, a bubble, we'll say, which we still haven't really seen, then people that can afford to live in, you know, $2,500, $3,000 rentals, they lose their jobs. God forbid something happens within the housing market or work-related anything. They go down to B class because that's what they can afford now. And then the Bs kind of go down to Cs. But if you think of a C class demographic affording, you know, anywhere from $800 to like $1,100 a month, I would argue, and at least in our market, you don't really see C class going down to like D class. Like, are they really going to go from a C class apartment to like a D class? Chances are no. I think that's the sweet spot. So I think that for me at least is the best place to start is a 2 to 4 unit multifamily building. If you're going to owner occupy it, great, get a low down loan. And if you're not, I think you'll always have a demand for that. And the price point is kind of the sweet spot.
Yeah, I agree. We have a couple like pretty nice commercial buildings,
right?
Like kind of A, B class. We get a lot of complaints. Like people in A and B class, they complain.
They are complainers.
They're complainers.
Yeah. I could not agree more.
Like, yes, in your C class duplex, you will probably get some complaints, but we're talking like,
Literally today, had a meeting with our property manager today, probably 2 hours before recording this, and how's everything going? So we have a professional office building. It's A-class tenants. You know, these are your attorneys, your accountants, your therapists, psychologists. And first complaint, as soon as someone, you guys need to trim the hedges back. Like, we just had a full landscaping pruning, like, throughout the whole property, and that was their complaint.
This guy,
like,
does a beautiful job. You didn't prune
enough. Right. Right. It's like, just, are you kidding me? Like, that is, you would never ever get that from a multifamily tenant, in my opinion, at least in our market.
And I can get it if, like, it's encroaching the walkway. I mean, we're not even talking anything remotely close to that.
Yeah. So it's insane. But yeah, I think going back to, like, so there's a lot of types of investments out there. You have multifamily, you have single family, and maybe, like, let's talk about some of the pros and cons to each one. So personally, other than my single family house, I've never owned a single family rental. However, I think there are some benefits to it. A lot of people just starting out, let's say the multifamily scene's hot, which it is in Connecticut, at least, and I would argue that all of northeastern, you know, part of the country, demand is high, supply is low, which is causing prices to increase. And so maybe you look to single family houses. Typically in our market, the landlord is responsible for water, sewer bills. You can't, I mean, I'm sure there's a way you split it out, and I know people have, but I think it's a little bit more complicated than just, oh, let's split out the water sewer and have each tenant pay their respective part.
Right.
So typically speaking, landlord pays for water, sewer. They pay for an owner's meter, you know, meter box, electricity, common hallways, outdoor lights, basement lights, things like that. Lawn and snow certainly is covered by the landlord. And those are just bills that you can pass on to your single family renter. You know, I think cash flow is a little bit better in the multifamily, more units under one roof. But as far as expenses go, it's a hell of a lot easier to manage. It's, you know, you have one tenant or maybe a family that lives in a single family house. They pay your the water sewer bill. Hopefully they have their own renter's insurance. They take care of lawn and snow. And I mean, you still have to pay your taxes and insurance, but that's about it. I mean, you just don't have as many overhead costs to owning a single family house. So just kind of like going through some pros and cons of each.
You know, one of my favorite things about single families is—
Have you ever owned one? Like,
yeah.
As a rental?
Two of them.
Oh, did you?
Yep.
Actually?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yep. No, one in Connecticut and one in Texas.
When you lived in Texas or?
When I lived in Texas, after I moved, I rented out the house that I built down there.
So you moved back to Connecticut and rented that Texas single family out?
Yes. And when I moved from Connecticut, I rented my single family that I was living in then.
So you owned a single family house that you lived in Connecticut. You moved to Texas, rented that Connecticut house out, long-distance investing.
Correct.
Landlording. And then eventually you moved back to Connecticut and rented that Texas house.
Correct.
So how'd that go?
It was good. Like you said, like, the guy paid everything. They paid everything.
So you paid the water
bill, passed that right along to them. Landscaping, nope, not paying for that. Snow, they took care of it. It was really good. And we can get into this maybe in a different show, but I put them on rent-to-own contracts.
What's that?
So basically, instead of just a normal tenant lease, you have in the agreement that for an agreed upon future price, they will sign off today that they will buy it by X date. So for example, I built the house in Texas and I said, okay, you know, in 2 years, sure, you can rent this for the next 24 months, but in 2 years, you need to buy this for $400,000. So they agreed, they put down a non-refundable deposit and they paid rent for the next 24 months. Now, there's a lot of ways to go about how to construct a contract like that, but this one was none of his rental payments went towards the price. So I've seen it where sometimes that is not the case, where all of your, you know, your rent or some of the rent goes off the final purchase price. But anyways, it's just a cool way to go about that.
Really interesting. Yeah. I mean, I guess just now comparing, so any single family or multifamily, 1 to 4 units would be considered residential, correct? And then commercial would be pretty much everything over that. So large multifamily, office, retail, mixed use, What do you think about some of the pros and cons between residential, again, 1 to 4 units in commercial? For me, being a real estate agent, I think of the valuation of it. So typically I'll say 8 to 9 out of 10 times in a residential property, it appraises at contract price, right? It's supposed to be subjective. It never is. Amazingly enough, it always appraises at the contract.
Funny how that happens. Yeah,
it's weird. But pros and cons to that is that it's based on this what's called the sales comparison approach versus commercial, which is based more heavily on the income approach. So when an appraiser goes to look at a single family house or a 2 to 4 unit multifamily house, he's going to look at what other properties have sold for. That's the sales comparison approach. He'll look at the numbers a little bit and he'll do a little bit of the income approach, but it's heavily based on the sales comparison approach. What other properties sold for, and is this property worth it, right? And so, I mean, I just had a 4 unit I was listing in Manchester, Connecticut. We had multiple offers, actually had like 10 offers on it, all over asking. I listed it for $500,000, which I thought was fair based on sales comparison approach comps. And I had a $525,000 offer. That was the offer we chose. Okay. And I was a little nervous, and they had a rider in there that said they would pay for any appraisal difference. So it was for $10,000. So basically what that means is that if this house, I'm willing to pay you $525,000. However, if it doesn't appraise for up to $515,000, I'll cover the difference essentially. And so sure enough, it appraised at like $480,000 and the deal fell completely apart. Mm. Income wise, made complete sense. It cash flowed for that person at $525,000. Everything made sense. They were going to live in one of the units. It was a 4 unit, like sweetheart of a deal, sail your way home, like no issues, but it did not appraise. And so I just don't see that happening as much on the commercial side because it's mainly based on the income approach, which is very simple to figure out. You just take your net operating income divided by, you know, the going cap rate of that market at the time, and you can kind of within reason figure out the value. It's a very simple formula. So from a commercial standpoint, like if I can increase my net operating income, I can pretty much increase the value of my property, or I can decrease in, either I increase income or I decrease in expenses to justify that or get a new net operating income, NOI. So it's a pretty easy formula that a lot of investors use. And it's just a whole nother world in the commercial space.
Yeah, I want to do an example. Can we do an example?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, we're going to do an example. So our commercial property, we're talking to a couple of potential tenants, right? Let's take one of the ones that want the basement space.
Okay, so this is Middletown building.
Correct.
It's a 40,000 square foot mixed use property, commercial.
Correct. Yes. Okay. So one of the tenants, we are proposing like $12 a square foot, something like that. Let's just say that the monthly rent's going to be $5,000. Isn't that something that we're...
Sure.
Okay. So let's do this out. So $5,000 a month, right?
Yeah.
There's 12 months in a year. So times 12, we get $60,000.
An annual rent. Yes. Rental income for that particular unit. Yep. Correct.
What's the going cap rate in Middletown?
I would argue it's 8.5.
Okay.
8 to 8.5.
So we're going to take 60,000 divided by 0.08, 750,000.
So basically, if you rent, what you're saying is if you rent that particular space for $60,000 a year based on an 8.5 cap, I could argue that I increased the value of my building by 700. What was the number you said?
750.
$750,000.
That is crazy.
Time. Yeah, but that's how it is. That's how it works.
That's the power of commercial.
And I think that's sometimes we lose sight of that. You know, with this, so that same building had that $17,000 stupid elevator bill. Like, we'll never, ever, ever see the repair on that elevator. Like, I'm glad it works and everyone is safe and like we needed to do it. Yes, we did it. However, it's like, I can't see that, right? But, and we get upset and we anger, oh, just sell it and go back to like 2 to 4 family investing. But when you have opportunities like that, it's, you know, it's kind of the other side of the story. It's like, well, maybe that's why we got into the larger space. So I, you know, still go back and forth. If I had to start all over again, I would still buy a 2 to 4 unit building, multifamily, you know, if live in it, sure. You don't have to, you know, if you already have a single family house. But like, if you want to start with real estate investing, I think that is the path of least resistance. I always think there's going to be a demand for multifamily investing. Doesn't matter what kind of market you're in, up, down, sideways, in between, like it doesn't matter. Like I always think that if you run a property right, it'll be rented out essentially.
Right. So I think the whole COVID experience sort of put all that in perspective, at least for me. Like we're in 2023, so we're sort of past COVID, but office was empty, like retail spots were drying up. Yep. Like a lot of like people need a place to live. They don't necessarily need an office. They don't necessarily need to have to go to like a retail spot. So those are kind of the first to go empty.
Sure.
But I think the last to go empty is going to be your living spaces. So
yeah,
that's really the huge pro for those.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And then I mean, mixed use is, it's kind of its whole other animal. I mean, we do have one mixed use building down in New London, Connecticut. The first called retail level is a restaurant, very successful restaurant. And then there's four residential apartments above. I'm kind of hung up on mixed use. It's certainly commercial. So it's the same income approach in terms of valuation. However, I think that they are harder to rent out. I think you can get them at a cheaper price. I mean, you know, just for numbers to share, like we paid $340,000, I want to say. For this property, we invested about $65,000. So what's that, $405,000 all in. And we had an appraisal, you know, earlier this year for $650,000. So you could either do a cash out refinance and tap into the equity. Obviously, your mortgage payment's going to be a little bit higher. But the reason why that was attractive for us was because in my opinion, we paid, you know, 60 cents on the dollar for what,
right,
you know, the income was. But no one wanted mixed use.
Yep.
Right. And you got a restaurant, you have, you know, four okay looking apartments. They look beautiful right now. And I would argue that area is appreciating, but I think mixed use is kind of, you know, the ugly child, you might say.
Yeah. And from a lender's perspective, super hard to finance.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you like, so it's five units, right?
Yeah.
Financing a mixed use five units versus financing five units as all apartments. Totally different story.
Why is that?
Because of where we're at in this market cycle. Like lenders or people in general are not as bullish on retail. Retail, apartments, whatever you want to call it. Like again, from a lender's perspective, the last thing to go is someone's living unit. Hmm. Like that really popular restaurant that we have, fantastic. But
yeah, it could fail out.
It could, right? We could get some other sort of pandemic sort of issue going on. Who knows what's in the future for all of us, but yeah, that's the risk. It's from a risk perspective. That's what that is.
Would you do single family to start? Would you do multifamily to start? Would you dive right into commercial?
So I could pick that question apart a touch. So knowing what I know now, or actually starting out fresh?
Knowing what you know now, you own office buildings, you own mixed use, you own large commercial, you own small multifamily. Like, what would you do?
I know you and I don't totally agree on this. And it's good. It's good. It's a good conversation. I think I would go all apartments, but not necessarily small. I'm good with like, maybe it's a 10 unit. Maybe it's
as a
30.
Your first real estate investment?
Knowing what I know now?
Yeah.
Yes. 100%. Starting out? No.
I don't see it. I think you go easy financing, 2 to 4 units, government financing. I don't know. I don't see it. Because, I mean, like you have to qualify for a commercial loan.
Yeah, of course. I think where I'm coming from is like, I like to have everything under one roof.
Right? Yeah. From a management perspective, absolutely.
Yes.
And we'll touch base into management in the next episode. But yeah, 100%. One, you know, would you rather have two, you know, duplexes scattered throughout your state or town or, you know, city, wherever it is, or 10 units under one roof?
Yeah. I mean, those five duplexes, $10,000 roofs, that's $50,000 in potential roof repairs where, yeah, sure, a 10 unit's going to have a big flat rubber roof or something like that, but maybe that's $30,000. That's just the principle of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
And your focus is all on that one property. That's like true. You are, that's your machine that you need to get well oiled.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, I think half the battle is just getting started, just taking that plunge and doing something, even if it's wrong. Just doing something.
Yeah. You know, everybody's going to make mistakes. We make mistakes every single day. It's been 11 years.
Every day.
Every day.
Well, no, I think it's an important topic to talk about. I think, you know, whether it's single family, commercial, multifamily, I mean, we could talk forever and ever on, you know, what to dive into first, but maybe at the end of the day, it's whatever you're most comfortable in. And maybe the path of least resistance is arguably 2 to 4 units, or maybe you're going to say, screw it. I got a great W-2 job. I'm not in the beginning stages of my investing career, and I'm just going to dive right into that 10, 12, 15 unit building.
Come join me on my side.
Yeah. The dark side, you might say. it's interesting. And, you know, I think bottom line, there's no bad time to start investing. There's no, you know, it's never a bad time to own good dirt. And, it's fun. I love hearing what everyone's, you know, first investment story is and how they got started. And, you know, I'm happy we can share ours.
Absolutely. Yeah, me too.
So I think that's all we have time for today. Remember, sky's the limit.
Dive deep and invest how you want to live.
Thank you for tuning in to Sky's the Limit podcast. This podcast is available on all your favorite podcast platforms, including in video on YouTube.
If you like what you heard, be sure to like, subscribe, follow, and review. We'll see you next week.